everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks, who is engineering and our producer for the hour today. And Tom, I hope everybody had a beautiful, lovely Christmas. Today, the day after, Thursday, December 26th, 2024. So Tom, we have a bunch of happies here. We have Happy Hanukkah. We have
Hanukkah started yesterday, right?
Yeah. We have Happy Kwanzaa, which started today and runs through New Year's Day. We have Happy Boxing Day, celebrated in the United Kingdom, Canada, and some other areas.
Has that carried over, that tradition, into the United States? And what exactly is Boxing Day?
Not really. That has not carried over. It was. It goes back to the day after, when everybody boxed up the gifts and then had leftovers from the Christmas.
So they dinner. So they box up the leftovers to give to
the needy. Right. So
in the US, we box up the leftovers and take them back to the store for a refund.
Yep. So I guess we could qualify as a Boxing Day country. And one more, Happy St. Stephen's Day. Which is tied into a little bit of a loose connection there to Boxing Day as well. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio at the Bustos Media Center in central Tucson, where we have five radio stations under one roof. This one is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk. Next week, big day for us. We'll launch into our 15th year of the Buckmaster radio program, and it will also begin my 37th year in Tucson radio and TV. We have our worldwide live listening and all of our podcasts on my website, buckmastershow.com. For our telephone interviews, the Buckmaster Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line for our monthly conversation with our contributor on public health. Will Humble is the executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association. Will has been in the business for about, well, going on now 4 decades. He's the former director of the Arizona Department of Health Services. Will, how was your Christmas day?
Good afternoon. But I'm kind of exhausted, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, you and a lot of other people probably, and that can be dangerous. People may be surprised to learn that the day after Christmas is the second deadliest day for heart attacks, second only to Christmas Day. So it's a dangerous week.
And then New Year's Day is third.
Wow. What's going on?
Well, it's been a phenomenon that, I mean, it's nationwide, and it happens in Arizona, too. I've seen the data. I remember seeing, when I was in the health director job, we'd see a big spike in emergency department visits on the day after Christmas. And that swings into one of the reasons we see these 3 days being the top for cardiac events and mortality from cardiac events, one of which is delayed care. So, and probably the biggest thing is delayed care, so basically what that means is that, let's say on Christmas Eve, you started to have chest pain, and if it was on June 4th, you know, you might go into the emergency department because right. You would say, hey, or even call 911 or something. But, you know, because of all the pressures with Christmas Eve, you don't want to be a problem for your family, whatever. You just decide, look, I'm going to ride this out. And so you have really 2 days, Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, being compressed into one day, the day after Christmas, in terms of, you know, people addressing things like chest pain, that if you get to it early, you know, you can identify that you got a blockage, you put in a stent, you go back home. Mm-hmm. If you don't address it, you could end up with a heart attack and a really bad outcome, maybe even dying. So one thing is delayed care. Another thing is just that, you know, it's sort of intuitive, which is the increased expectations that people have. I'm talking about seniors mainly here, not people mm-hmm. in their 40s and stuff. You know, you might be tired, but your family's expecting you to go do something, and you do it even though you're really wiped out and you probably wouldn't have normally done it, but you do it anyway. And that causes some of that, some of the increased, you know, hospitalizations and deaths. And then finally, overindulging, you know, eating too much food and alcohol, and then combined with that, comes not good sleep. So people not, you know, getting a good night's sleep because of what they've eaten and drinking. So it's really those three things that combine to make it. And it's a sizable increase, about 20-35% increase in cardiac deaths on those days.
Wow. So everybody take a deep breath and try to de-stress and relax for a couple of days here and get through New Year's Day. Well, how are we doing, Will Humble, as far as the flu season across the country? It's really picking up. I know, has Arizona shown any kind of an increase as well, Will?
Yeah, so the big three respiratory viruses, of course, are RSV, influenza, and then COVID-19. And there's three different things going on at once. Right now, Arizona's we're finally getting a big upswing in the influenza infections. The common flu is what people would know it as. That's really increasing a lot right now. So we never really had much of an increase in November for influenza, and really not until the last couple weeks have we seen an increase in influenza in Arizona. So now is a great time. Take this week if you're off work and haven't gotten your flu shot yet. This is a great time to do it. Get on board, because it looks to me, if you look like a chart, it's going to peak in January probably mid-January. So now's a good time to get your influenza vaccine. For COVID, it's really actually pretty not much circulating right now in Arizona on COVID. We had a little bit of a bump over the summer. I expect, you know, to see some more COVID infections coming here in the next month or so, but there's no signs of it increasing, at least right now. And then the third leg of that respiratory virus stool is RSV, and that's really unique this year in that RSV is really going gangbusters around the rest of the United States, but not much here. And I attribute that to the fact that we've had two really bad RSV years in a row mm-hmm. in Arizona, which means that a lot of people who were infected last winter and the winter before still have some immunity that's protecting them from infection. So to wrap it up in a bow, RSV is really not much of a deal, at least in Arizona yet. COVID really hasn't had its expected spike, but influenza is on the way up.
And it is worth noting, if you have had the RSV shot, that is not an annual shot like the flu shot. That is protection apparently is built in for several years. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah. And I got mine last year, maybe the year before, right after it came out is when I got that one. So yeah, it's more like the pneumonia vaccine, which is not quite one and done, but close.
Well, there's been, everybody's noticed, it's all over social media, and of course, this guy who shot in the back, the head of United Healthcare, has become, to some, a hero. I think it would be worthwhile spending some time, Will, about talking about when your claim on treatment is denied, do you really have much recourse?
You can try. So here's the things that you can try. When your claim is denied, or what happens to a lot of people is their doctor says, this is the treatment that you need. And then you come back a week later and your doctor says, well, your insurance company won't pay for that treatment, or says it's not medically necessary, something like that. There's things that you can do to appeal that. The first thing is to get with your insurance carrier directly, give them a call, and be persistent. Really be a pain in the neck. Honestly, squeaky wheels do get the grease. It's true. So keep calling when those things happen and escalate and ask to talk to a supervisor. You may or may not be able to, you know, that might not work, but do it anyway and document, your phone calls. And if they continue to not authorize your treatment or deny your claim, the next step is to call your insurance company and request something very specific. It's called a claim file. It's kind of a boring name, but it's an important document, a claim file. And they're required by law to give you that claim file. And that claim file documents the reason why they denied your claim or would not authorize your treatment. And at that point, you can file an appeal. Now, if you have a marketplace plan, you know, through if you bought it on healthcare.gov through one of the marketplace plans, you have a couple of court under the Affordable Care Act, you have some protections. You can ask for an internal or an external review. If you just have commercial health insurance through work, you still can you could still file your appeal, but you got to be fast. Because some of these companies have policies. They're like, 30 and 60 day limitations. So when your claim is denied or your treatment's not authorized, get on the stick right away and stay with it. And then finally, if none of that works, you can still file a complaint with the Arizona Department of Insurance and Financial Institutions. I put up a blog last week, I think, that if you go to that link, it'll show you how to file that that complaint with the state. I'm not going to make any promises that this is going to work, but those are the vehicles that you have. And probably the most important thing to remember is to be a squeaky wheel and don't go away, because some of these companies just, whether you're a provider or whether you're an individual insured person, it's deny, and then eventually the people quit. But if you don't quit, you have a better chance of getting what you need.
And where can people find that blog and follow you through the Arizona Public Health Association?
Yeah. You can punch into Google Arizona Public Health Association, Will's blog, or you can go to AZPHA, Public Health Association, AZPHA.org, and it's a blog from last week, but it's got the links in there. Also, I put in a link from a journalist from ProPublica who details how to actually get and request your claim file. So that's a helpful tool for people on their quest to get their treatment or get their claims paid.
And I think it would be worthwhile to kind of look at the big picture, and we will do this after the break with Will Humble about why is the American healthcare system, the delivery system, so confusing and some would contend so broken. We'll talk with Will about that after we take the break. But first, before we go into the recorded break, I want to talk about my favorite bakery in town, Mona's Danish Bakery. They're still very much in holiday mode up there. They've got plenty of the holiday cookies still available and all the wonderful desserts. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is the website. And stop by. Say hello to Steve and the team at Mona's, conveniently located in the lower foothills area. Well, maybe mid foothills, you could call it, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. We'll take a break right here. We're talking public health with Will Humble, the former director of the Arizona Health Department. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Take the Regional Transportation Authority's brief survey of its draft $2.46 billion Regional Transportation Plan. The 20-year RTA Next Draft Plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, and environmental improvements for the greater Tucson region. The RTA Board will consider your feedback before it prepares a final draft for voter consideration as early as November 2025. We invite you to take our brief survey at rtanext.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show from the Bustos Media Center in central Tucson, and we are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios on the live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Is Will Humble, who is the he's the executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association and the former director for the Arizona Department of Health. Will, I want to pick up a little bit about that was good information that you gave us about how you go about filing a claim if you have been denied a medical treatment. But generally, when you take the 30,000-foot look at our healthcare system, some will say, one, it's confusing, and many will probably say the whole system is broken. I'd like your take on that.
Well, I'll leave the judgment calls to other people. I'll just explain why we ended up the way we ended up. And the story really goes back to the end of World War II. So at the end of World War II, remember, much of Europe was in ruins. And the soldiers that were deployed out there in Europe and even in the Pacific were coming back to the U.S. And the economy was really moving up. And really, Europe and the U.S. took two different paths when it comes to healthcare at that point. In Europe, they decided to go for a more universal coverage model where essentially the insurer would be each of their federal governments in one way, shape, or form. You know, the UK does it one way, France does it another way. But in general, they have national health care insurance in those countries and nationalized health care. In the U.S., we took a very different approach by really focusing on an employer-based model so that as the soldiers were returning, one of the things that businesses were doing was trying to recruit some of those soldiers to come work. And one of the ways that they would recruit people to work for them is to offer benefits. There was limitations on what you could pay people. There was wage and price controls for part of that. And so you could say, well, we'll give you this health insurance through by working here at this company. And so we really developed a health insurance network that was based on employment. And it was really that way for the most part until 2010. You know, Harry Truman tried to get sort of a Medicare system for everybody going in the early 50s when he was right after Roosevelt, right in that period. But it was the AMA killed the bill. in Congress. And so we maintained this sort of fragmented system over time. You know, in 65, Medicare and Medicaid were added. That was during the Johnson administration. And but by and large, we have developed this patchwork model, whereas, you know, the European democracies have more of a universal model. And the result is really that we spend a lot more on healthcare than they do. So in the U.S., it's about 16.5% of gross domestic product, which goes to healthcare. In most of the European countries, it's closer to 9, 10, 11%. So it costs more here, and it's more fragmented here. And, you know, it's cheaper over in the European areas. I'll let your listeners decide which system is better, but, you know, that's basically how we got here.
And it is a third rail on a political, when you start talking about changing this. You've got, the AMA and all the lobbyists in D.C. It's so ingrained. It's pretty hard to change the system at this point, isn't it?
Well, I think it's next to impossible. I mean, here's the thing. You've got these entrenched interests now with the health insurance companies. They all have well-paid lobbyists. They contribute generously to members of Congress, and then you have the association groups, the medical association and others, the hospital groups, so they all have entrenched interests and they want to protect their existing business models for the most part. And so I think at this point, it was something really bad would have to happen before there would be any kind of movement, I think, to do something dramatic. And in the meantime, I think, you know, there were a lot of protections built in the Affordable Care Act. We talked earlier about your ability to ask for internal and external audits if you have a marketplace plan. So things did improve with access to care through the Affordable Care Act. And I think for the foreseeable future, it's that we're going to probably keep the same landscape.
And the middleman makes a big cut, obviously, out of this. Had a listener who just said, a lot of it doesn't go to healthcare directly. It goes to a health insurance company, which provides no medical care at all, just the middleman taking their cut. What's your reaction to that listener?
Your listener is correct. One of the reasons we pay 16% of our GDP versus something more reasonable in the 10, 11, 12% range is there's a lot of administrative fees that are built into having a system like we have. Now, there's some advantages to having a more privatized system like we have in that, you know, there's fewer, like if you need a medical procedure and you have good insurance, there's a good chance you're going to be able to get that care relatively quickly when compared to, say, the UK. So there are some advantages, but the big thing is we're paying a lot more for healthcare than we need to be, and it's an artifact of how, you know, the system is built up, and included in that is what your listener said, which is there's a lot of administrative fees and costs that are built into the system, which is causing us to have to spend so much of our wealth on healthcare insurance.
Before we go, Will, I want to touch on fluoride in water. We had Tim Tom, you're the former head of Tucson Water, as our Friday Focus interview last week, and Tim has now moved up and he's the city manager. And I brought this up about the whole fluoride controversy, and we're going to hear more about it if RFK Jr. is confirmed heading up the nation's health system. We do not add fluoride to the water here in the city of Tucson. As Tim pointed out, though, there is naturally occurring fluoride in the city water system.
Yeah, so a lot of places in Arizona, well, first of all, let's just talk about fluoride just generally. It's the number one thing that you can do at the community level to improve people's oral health, especially kids. If they're drinking fluoridated water and are getting, if some way, shape, or form are getting enough fluoride, they're going to have better teeth. When their permanent teeth come in, they'll be better, stronger teeth. But the fluoride's also good for adults' oral health too. So it's a good, well-established public health intervention with a high return on investment. But going back to where that fluoride comes from, it depends on where you're getting your water. So a lot of rural water systems in Arizona are on groundwater. And when you have groundwater, it tends to have higher naturally occurring levels of fluoride. And many places around the state, Kingman is one example, they already have plenty of fluoride in the water. They don't need to fluoridate. You know, places in Phoenix where it's mostly surface water, not exclusively, but mostly surface water, there's just not enough fluoride in the water to be optimally fluoridated, which is 0.7 milligrams per liter. I'm not familiar with the levels in Tucson. Did he say what their levels were?
No.
But I know that much of water is in Tucson is they're recharging the CAP water into the groundwater and then pulling it back out, which maybe that brings enough fluoride in to make it optimal. I didn't listen to the show though.
He just said that it's not. They're not adding any fluoridation. It whatever's in there is small amount that occurs naturally. So that we didn't get into the specific number.
I mean, ideally you'd have 0.7 milligrams per liter, and that would be. But I don't know what the Tucson level is actually.
All right. Before we let you go, Will, big health issue. Is there one jumping out at you for Arizona in 2025?
Not really. You know, this whole thing with H5N1 influenza, the new bird flu, you know, that may or may not turn into something. At this point, it's infecting mostly, you know, birds and some mammals. Seems to be more cats and cattle than pigs. If that H5N1 begins to infect pigs and it's lethal in pigs, that's the point at which I would start to really look more carefully at H5N1 to see if it turns into something more dangerous in humans. But at this point, it's not.
All right. Let's keep our fingers crossed that it doesn't. Will, I want to wish you and yours a very happy new year. Thank you very much for your monthly participation in our program. Thank you, sir.
Hey, thanks, Bill, and I'll talk to you in January.
Okay. Will Humble with us once a month on the Buckmaster Show, one of our great contributors. Take a break right here on this Boxing Day. Be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade. Using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality,
and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on this St. Stephen's Day, a Boxing Day, start of Kwanzaa, start of Hanukkah, day after Christmas, the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studios, Green Things, 3384 East River Road, now featuring Zocalo Fountains, which is part of Zocalo Village there on the property, their beautiful 13-acre site, which is really a grower's paradise, family-owned and operated since 1970. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com, the starting place for your gardening adventure over at Green Things. When we do our telephone interviews, the live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. General Ted Maxwell has led the Southern Arizona Leadership Council as its president and CEO since 2018. His nearly 34 years of military service includes 15 years in active duty Air Force and an additional 19 in the Arizona Air National Guard. He retired as a two-star general in 2018. His final military position, commander of the Arizona Air National Guard. Governor Ducey, back in 2021, appointed the general to represent Pima County on the 7-member Arizona State Transportation Board. He is also the ADOT representative on the 9-member Regional Transportation Authority Board of Directors. Ted is host of the very popular Ted Maxwell Show on Tuesday mornings here on 1030 The Voice. He's on at 9 to 10. It's part of the Jump in Tucson banner, and he joins us now on the live line. General Maxwell, I hope you had a joyous Christmas day.
Bill, I hope your Christmas was very merry and enjoyable. It was a great day yesterday to spend with a large, big, blended family, and my granddaughter and grandson got in late last night to Tucson. They're going to be here for about the next week and a half, so I'm really excited. I just saw them about 30 minutes ago for the first time.
That's great. You're getting caught up.
First time on this trip.
Yeah, getting caught up with family. What are you hearing from your associates at the Arizona Department of Transportation on the delay of what was supposed to be a major transportation project around a busy shopping area on Tucson's south side? Any news on that?
Well, Bill, be aware that I felt like hearing supposed to be. It is going to be a major transportation interchange project. It's going to take time. I think that's one of the things that's delayed the start. The actual time frame for the construction and the completion is going to take about 18 months. In October, they had a public outreach, like all projects that ADOT and PAG and RTA do. We always like to reach out and get input from the public on their concerns or what their input on based on the current designs, because we try to address those things when we can. And there was a lot of concern at that time raised about the fact that if we started it in mid to late 2025, it would actually cover two holiday periods. And for a lot of those businesses and a lot of businesses in the region, you know, the holiday times is a time where people tend to spend, we tend to buy, we tend to give, we, you know, book gifts to others, but also give gifts to folks in need. And so we hate to see the shopping and the ability for those businesses over there to flourish and thrive, because road construction will always impact a business area when it happens. And this is going to be a big one. You mentioned it. It's a traffic interchange on Irvington Road with I-19. It's going to add a cloverleaf. It's going to do a couple other things. But when it is done, the flow in and out of traffic into both the business areas and with folks trying to get home from work or get to work or get to the residential areas will be significantly improved. You look no further than the improvements at the INA TI and what it's created, the ability for people to get on, in the addition of Twin Peaks up a little farther north. We're hoping that will help the South Side really gather, because that's an area that's growing a lot. That Southwest corridor is getting a lot more people, but it's also getting a lot more business.
So this is not a part of the Regional Transportation Authority. People get very confused about the timeline and how these projects originated, Ted Maxwell.
Right, that is correct. I don't believe that this intersection was on the RTA one. It may have been, but remember, when we're doing anything with one of the traffic interchanges that impact any of the federal highways, that project is going to be managed by ADOT and the Department of Transportation. Sometimes we get confused and we say, oh, PAG or RTA is not doing a good job because, you know, that road is taking so long or this is taking so much time. But PAG and RTA does not actually manage any projects. Those projects are managed by the municipalities that they impact, where they are, where the roads or the development's occurring. And if it has to do with a federal state highway, that's the responsibility of the Arizona Department of Transportation. So ADOT is the one that will be managing this. Thus, they're the ones that have been doing the outreach, reviewing the designs, working with the communities and the businesses in the area to make sure it doesn't impact them. But this is going to be a significant project. I mean, the improvement for flow, I think Rob Elias was commented, the president of the Tucson, or now the Southern Arizona Hispanic Chamber, commented in the paper the other day that that's part of town he's frequented quite a bit, and he says he's sat through multiple lights at trying to get across that traffic interchange, and we'll improve that.
But if people are thinking the Arizona Department of Transportation will be riding to the rescue over the next 20 years to cover our regional transportation needs, it is not going to go that way, is it, General?
No, Bill, you have that exactly right. Right now, as a lot of people, a lot of your listeners understand, we're coming to the end of the original RTA, and the RTA brings in about 2/3 of the total investment in our region for road and infrastructure every year. If RTA next, it expires, original RTA expires in June of 26th. If we don't find a way to get that across the finish line, we will be facing a 2/3 reduction of over $120 million a year that goes into helping our regional roads that are the feeders and the arterials and the main roads that we all travel on. And that means that transit travels on, that the buses, the Ubers, and as well as those of us trying to get to and from work and maybe just going around town to see people.
2025 will be a major year then for the future of regional transportation.
That's absolutely true. There's, obviously with the unexpected passing of Mayor Honey, there's a new mayor in South Tucson. There's going to be some new faces, I think, on the board. We'll have to spin them up and get them caught back up to speed real quick on where we're at. But I feel very positive that we have a plan that is out right now to the public for input that will give us a little bit more guidance on what the public and the business leaders and the different organizations want to see in their regional transportation plan. That's important. So I'd encourage anybody who feels like they want to have some say, do they want more transit, they want more roads, is their part of the community not being addressed in the current RTA Next plan, make sure you go online to the Regional Transportation Authority website and fill out a survey. Those surveys are going to be very important on our future decision-making.
Let's take a break right here, rather than I want to address with you, General Maxwell, what you are looking at when the legislative session begins here next month, really in a couple of weeks. By the way, our Friday Focus interview tomorrow will be Senator-elect Vince Leach will be our Friday Focus interview. We'll hear from him as he returns to the Capitol and see what he believes will be the big issues for 2025. But we'd like to hear your input as well, General. So stick around. We'll take a break right here, back with General Ted Maxwell right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane in North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. You can now review and comment on the Regional Transportation Authority's draft $2.46 billion regional transportation plan at one of several upcoming RTA Next open houses. The draft 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, and environmental improvements for the greater Tucson region. It's your plan. Tell us what you think. Learn more and find dates for an upcoming open house near you at rtanext.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on this day after Christmas, Boxing Day, St. Stephen's Day. Happy Kwanzaa, happy Hanukkah, and I hope everybody had a great Christmas. Many people have time off. Be a great time to head over to a beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment, Silver City. It's about a three-hour drive. Once you're there, you'll enjoy that lovely mountain climate. Usually around 5,000 to 6,000 feet there in historic Silver City. So check it out, southwestnewmexico.org, a great starting place before you hop in the car, truck, or even jump on the motorcycle for a trip east to Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. On the live line today, we have General Ted Maxwell, the live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. General Maxwell, he has wears so many different hats. His day job, I guess, as you could put it, is leading the Southern Arizona Leadership Council, where he's been president and CEO since 2018. And one of your responsibilities, General Maxwell, is really keeping an eye on the legislature. Just curious, what's jumping out at you as the session begins in a couple of weeks?
Well, Bill, it's been a great opportunity in this last month, more so than maybe I've seen in the last several years, on the ability to reach out to members of the legislature and their desire to talk and find out, A, what people are concerned with and what's important and what's going forward. I had the great opportunity to meet with the new speaker, Steve Montenegro, the other day, and he really was emphasizing the fact that he wants to bring decorum back to the House and to get things done. Now, don't, you know, nobody needs to fool themselves. Steve's still a very conservative Republican, but he's got a lot of ideas. What he wants to do is he knows that, yes, there will probably be a handful of things that the caucus finds important that they're going to be moving through the Senate, and it's going to be getting up to the governor's office. And good chance a lot of it will face a veto. But at the same time, he believes that they have an opportunity to find consensus on issues from education. Prop 123 is a big issue this year as it's about to expire. The normal expenditure limitation act, for the schools that they face, that's a continual problem. I think he's willing to engage on that. And there's several other items that I think his caucus, as part of the caucus, and that in the Senate, something you can bring up with Mr. Leach tomorrow, they may have some good things that they can get passed that I think will get some bipartisan support or at least face an opportunity of getting signed into law by the governor.
The governor moved forward with the water management, declaring a water management area. The exact term of that kind of slips my mind right now, but for the Wilcox area where legislative approval, General Maxwell, was not required. It'd be interesting to see how the lawmakers move in that area, the critical area, I believe, of water.
Well, water is a big issue, and I think all the legislators on both sides of the aisle understand that we've got several things that are important. One is the management and oversight of our groundwater. But the other big one that's coming up is the Colorado River. And the Central Arizona Project brings, you know, 8.4 million acre feet, which is a lot of water to us in southern Arizona. And with the levels currently in Lake Havasu and Lake Powell, what they are, there's always concern that we need to get the next compact, which expires in 2026, at the end of 2026 as well. We need to get a compromise with the upper basin states as well as the lower basin states, which us, Nevada and California, make up the lower basin states, are in play. And it's at a standstill. The lower basin states are struggling to get something that would be acceptable, Arizona and California to a large extent, especially our agriculture. Industries rely heavily on that water off the Colorado. So that's going to be very important. So there's going to be a lot of issues. Remember the last 2 years ago when Governor Ducey left office, they authorized almost $1 billion for WIFA, the Water Infrastructure Fund. And that money has gone away. Senator Leach has spoken outwardly about that because he was not in the delegation. So they're going to have to address what are we going to do to either, you know, come up with new ideas on how we can create water, what kind of funding, what kind of technologies out there. So there's a lot of issues on water. That's going to include the groundwater issue. I know there's many that are also open to talk about the way to convert from ag to housing, because some people don't understand it, but you can actually use less water but if you actually develop some agricultural land. And there's profit to be made by both the current landowners off that as well as the communities.
The third leg of the stool, if you will, General Maxwell, will be how the legislature will go about immigration and the whole labor issue that is associated with it.
Well, if you looked at the results of the election this year, Bill, it's very obvious that the citizens of Arizona are very concerned with the border and immigration. The biggest challenge remains immigration and border has many different aspects, from the security of the border, got to stymie the flow of fentanyl. We have to bring people into this country knowingly and with who run the process and the laws as they're set up today. We also have to make it easier for folks who want to come into our country and work and support us to immigrate, to come into this country, at least under a visa program or a day worker program. There's so many things that we have to address. The challenge remains in Congress is that if you try to address it all at once, everybody's got something they hate about it. Mm-hmm. So they've almost got to break it into different parts, the immigration piece, the worker visa piece, the border security, the enforcement, and make it so that everybody can see what's good on the individual pieces and then package them together. But right now, that's a long shot. Thus, to your point, the state legislature speaking more and more loudly about what they need to do. Now, the question is, with the passing of Prop 312, or 314, sorry, 314 last year, the one that allows the state law enforcement and state authorities to play more of a role in immigration, as on your show I stated earlier, it was an unfunded mandate. Mm-hmm. So the question is, will this legislature try to put some funding into the sheriffs and the state offices that can actually help with that enforcement? And as you know, we can talk about all the issues, but it's all going to come down to the budget and the money. And that will be the challenge for this legislative session.
I want to transition before we let you go, because this is an area you're very close to with the Arizona, your service with the Arizona Air National Guard. The Air Force will be conducting listening sessions in early 2025 about noise levels, perhaps expanding some of the range. What is your take on that, General Maxwell?
Well, Bill, I'm a huge supporter of aviation in general here in Arizona. It's a reason we have a Marine Corps air station. We've got three air bases. We've got a ton of civilian flight programs going on, too. And part of it's because we are, as a state, largely wide open spaces and wide open air. And so it makes it very easy for training to be accomplished. I think that the argument against this expansion of range space has been kind of misled in some ways. We've heard a lot of talking about the massive forest fires by the dropping of flares. Well, every time we exploit flares in the military, every time we do something where we follow the rules that we're given, and those rules make the safety assurance extremely high. A lot of times when you hear about a fire being started by flares, it's because it was dropped on the range, which is totally fenced off, secured, and that's what it's intended. If something's going to go wrong, it's going to be on the range, but it's not a roaring fire in the mountains and throughout Arizona. So I think sometimes we don't understand that the Air Force and those who train in that airspace, we care about the community, we care about the people on the ground, and we follow rules all the time. There's lots of red areas, overpopulated areas that we know we can't do what we can do 15 miles away from, but the future with our latest modern technologies requires larger airspace and more continuity of airspace to train at the distances now we engage. And if what makes our, one of the things that makes our country great is we have one of the best fighting forces, and it allows our influence to be that, and also protects us and defends us in the long run.
The noise level of the aircrafts, is this an issue?
Well, it is. The noise level, I mean, the F-35 is a louder aircraft than the F-16. And, I flew F-16s. So that means the military has to put in process and procedures. But when you're talking about what's going on at the airspace, the biggest concern is the supersonic flight. Because the supersonic flight, when you're starting to, and things do happen, and if we do it in the wrong area, we could shatter some glass or to do some, it'd be definitely something that would scare people. I mean, it's going to be loud. But again, the rules, regulations, and procedure are put in place to do this. And the airspace they're talking about, there's lots of room where supersonic flight. Right now we do it all above 30,000 feet. I think the request for the new airspace is to bring it down a little lower. And there's parts of the airspace that'll be fine. There are parts of the airspace that it wouldn't be fine, but those will all be defined. But to say we shouldn't expand and improve the airspace for the training of our young men and women who are willing to defend our country in modern aircraft, we're being naive. I think, in my Ted's opinion, we really need to support that training. Because
right.
If they can't ever fly to the full capacity of the aircraft, except in a time of war, that's not the time to learn. You need to learn that in training.
All right, General Ted Maxwell, hope you and yours have a wonderful New Year's weekend coming up, and we appreciate everything you do for us. Thank you, General.
You're more than welcome, Bill. Right back to you, and I look forward to seeing you in the new year.
All right, thank you very much. General Ted Maxwell with us. That will wrap up the Buckmaster Show for this day after Christmas. Back tomorrow. Have a great day.